Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Hello and welcome back to the Oakland Athletics All 162 podcast with Ethan Strauss. We're here to talk about the hottest team in Major League Baseball. 11 straight wins for your Oakland A's, Ethan.
I turned off the game once, like right before it was going to go into extras. And then right before the final inning, I thought it was done. And then another miracle, Anthony. It's truly incredible. We could totally get into it. Offensive
team
explosion.
That knows how to win ball games.
Matt Olson, most underrated player in baseball. Is that what we're discussing?
The Minnesota Twins had two errors tonight that completely lost them the game in extra innings. Second baseman booted it, and the third baseman threw it away right at the end. I do that to transition to the Warriors because, man, there's probably people listening to this podcast that are like, whoa, they've gone way too long on this. It's actually the Warriors All 82 podcast, and the Warriors keep squandering games late. They keep kind of botching situations. Probably should have been a 5-0 road trip. You could definitely argue 4-1. With me because, Tatum went and won that game in Boston. I guess you could say Westbrook came and won that game tonight for the Wizards. But you hand Steph Curry back an 11-point lead with 5 minutes left.
Yeah,
oof. You got to win that game. And I mentioned the late issues. That's Andrew Wiggins missing a game time layup in the final 20 seconds. It wasn't a wide open is too strong, but a should make layup. Yeah. And it was similar to the one Draymond Green missed in Boston to tie it in the final minute. So, and we can go on and on and on this season. Well, Damian Lee just a couple weeks ago missed one or didn't even take one against the Wizards.
Well, it's like
did
they hand back an 11-point lead to Steph Curry, or did they hand back a lead to a depleted end of the road trip, gave everything, battling injuries, wearing the butt pad, Steph. And it almost seemed to me, at least, that in this game, the guys who had the biggest load finally fell apart at the end of the road trip. That's what it looked like to me. That didn't look like Steph. That looked like Monstars, Space Jam, talent taken for a lot of that game, and it just looked like fatigue and out of rhythm. And so in a certain way, it made sense that they were carried by the spirited performances of the bench that almost got them there.
Yeah. It was almost, I called it in my post game, like the most well-earned terrible game ever. Mm-hmm. You know, like you can't sit there and criticize Steph Curry, but the stats are what the stats are. He was 7 of 25 shooting, so 18 points on 25 shots, 6 turnovers, bad turnovers too. He said that his least favorite play of the game was he was coming up the court and he kind of pump fake Alex Lynn out of the play, and his choice was wide open three, swing it to a hot Jordan Poole who had a wide open three on the corner, or Kelly Oubre had kind of sprung free for a dunk, and he tried like a sidearm pass
Am I exaggerating if I say that might have been the worst passing game I've seen from him in all my time watching? Is that crazy?
Yeah, he had a really bad first quarter against Philadelphia the game before. Now, he completely corrected it so much that I literally had a tweet in the middle of the first quarter that said, like, Three turnovers, two missed shots, 0 points for Steph Curry. He looks out of whack tonight, you know, with the ankle thing. And then that everyone was old takes exposing it after the game because he turned out he scored 49 points. But yeah, his last two games he has not passed well. I don't know if you're exaggerating because he's had some bad passing games.
Oh yeah,
his career, as we
I
know.
Mean, he's certainly but had bad passing games that mattered more in the grand scheme of things. But this one, you know, at times it looked like he was trying to hit the hands of his opponents and. It's hard to criticize him. I think we're doing it in the context of he has given everything on this road trip. He is delivering an incredible season. But at the same time, it just...
They lost tonight because he lost them the game, which is fine. Yeah. I mean, that happens over the course of a season. He missed four shots in the final five minutes that were wide open threes.
If you just watched this game with the sound off and you didn't know anything about... If we transported you from the year 1980 and just had you watch this game and you didn't know anything about Steph Curry, you would just think, this guy is terrible. This guy is awful.
You want to know what I thought... think is a little bit funny or ironic about this game is like, so he has a bad first quarter. They have a really bad first quarter. I think they're down 38-20 at the end of the first quarter. He had a few turnovers. The Warriors had 9 turnovers. Wiggins wasn't good tonight, by the way. I mentioned the really bad late miss. Yeah. He went 5 of 20. So those are your two best scorers going 12 of 44. But he leaves at the end of the first quarter down 18. And maybe at the time he's sitting there thinking like, look, this is just one of those blowout nights. And I'm tired. Everybody in the first quarter look tired, and it would have been if they had just lost by 25 and just got boat raced right away. We wouldn't be sitting here talking about Curry's mistakes and Curry's plus minus tonight because it wouldn't have stuck out. Everyone would have had about a bad plus minus. But the problem is the bench was so good that it spotlights what Curry did because Kelly Oubre, 24 points. Jordan Poole, 22 huge points at important times. So they not only drag that 18 point deficit. So you know, they enter the second quarter down 18. I think it's down 2 when Steph comes back. It was like a plus 16 stretch. And then they just explode in the fourth quarter and give him that 11 point lead that gets melted away. But, so it's like his teammates doing what they don't usually do made it. So we're sitting here talking more about Steph's performance.
They did. They made a game out of it. I should say maybe since Steph had 8 assists, you can't say it was his worst passing performance ever. It just seemed incredibly sloppy. That's what I'll leave it at. We won't go with worst. We won't be hyperbolic, I suppose, though. That would be an interesting trolley list kind of article to do on The Athletic. Just Steph Curry's 10 worst passing games. Just at the height of his amazing season. It would be interesting to see the reactions, Anthony.
There are listeners listening to us right now being like, just these haters. This is the game Ethan would come on the Warriors.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's how we do it. That's how we do it.
And we spend the first 10 minutes like dissecting all of Curry's mistakes.
The Warriors lose, and then, you know, your phone is just ringing and ringing. You're like, God, Ethan, stop asking me to come on the podcast just because the Warriors lost. It's ridiculous. I was hoping for a win. It's more fun to talk about a win. I don't know if that's objective, but objectively, that's what I would rather talk about. And some of the bench performances were exciting. Bazemore, that block on Avdija before the unfortunately what happened to him later, but that block out of nowhere, I thought to myself, he probably has never seen anything like that playing in Israel. That was just completely out of nowhere. There are guys hitting the floor. It's nice to see another Jordan Poole game where he's coming back to life. And we talked about that on the podcast where he was scuffling, but I think we all more or less liked how he was playing. And in this game, he was especially aggressive, more so when he has the offense and Steph's not on the floor, it seems. And those results, I think, were very encouraging. I mean, you've got some up and down stuff from this season with Poole, but I think that was encouraging. There was some encouraging stuff in this game, even if it ended in a massive disappointment. And also with the whole play-in setup, I'm not even sure what the pressure is. I'm not even sure.
Let's go one by one with these topics because I want to talk Oubre, I want to talk Poole, and then I want to talk wider scope, like, you know, where this.
Oh,
is
I forgot. I forgot. I'm an Oubre hater. I should have given credit. Oubre, great game.
Let's dive into
tongue
Oubre.
In cheek.
So he misses 5 games, and it's 5 of the better games of the season. Obviously, Steph looks unlocked. you know, Bazemore's more of a ball mover. The starting lineup, not only without Oubre, but without Wiseman, was just working. Everything was working to the point that Steve Kerr benched Kelly Oubre. You know, so he was maybe going to come back in the Boston game, and Kerr was like, doesn't, you know, even if he comes back, he's coming off the bench. So you knew going into the Philly game, like, no, Kelly Oubre is now a reserve, which that wouldn't seem like as big a deal if right before the deadline, it became a huge storyline that he literally came out and said that he doesn't view himself as a bench player. And that was kind of, you know, an underlying tension with the whole,
I like him better in the supplementary bench role, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think if, on a winner, that's clearly where he fits best. Now, again, I think he has larger career aspirations. But in this current moment, go ahead.
I didn't want to interrupt. I'm enjoying starter Bazemore. I mean, that's the other thing.
Yeah. Six steals tonight, by the way, including that late one that almost tied the game. But Kelly Oubre is an energy bench player on a winning team. That's what he should be. Can be weirdly streaky himself, and sometimes you like that out of bench guys. You bring him in, and if they're, you know, Kerr, I don't think, planned to play Kelly Oubre the final 18 minutes of the first half tonight. He put him in with 6 minutes to go in the first quarter, and he probably would have taken him out at some point, but Kelly Oubre had 18 first half points. He just never took him out because he was playing really well, so he went super small, and you can do that with bench players. You can kind of selectively, you know, put them in and pull them out a little bit easier, and he's clearly accepted this role for the rest of the season. And for the Warriors, that's all that really matters at this moment. They'll get to free agency when they get to free agency. And, you know, does this affect his desire to be with the Warriors long term? Should the Warriors even want him long term? Do they need to get a trade exception? Blah, blah. Like, those are all relevant future conversations. For right now, this rotation fits better, and Kelly Oubre seems to fit better in the role you saw him in tonight. And he had a really good game. Yeah. And it was only his second game back, and it was solid.
I 1,000,000% agree. I enjoy this Kelly Oubre way more than the Kelly Oubre who off the bat is part of the offense. And I've been a little surprised about what Bazemore is bringing to the table in the starting role and how much energy he's bringing on the defensive end. And it's going to be a roller coaster with either one of those guys. But that switch is one that I support and I think has worked out well. I want to add something else too, because I think it bears mentioning that Wiggins had an awful offensive game, but I thought he had a very good defensive game. So that's another thing worth mentioning.
Yeah, I mean, second time he's guarded Beal well, to the point that might have been a post game story, but also the second time he ruined that post game story was something in the final minute that helped lead to a loss. The first time it was that and one foul on Beal in the corner. This time it was the missed layup to kind of cap his 5 of 20 night. But look, Andrew Wiggins is a very good wing defender. That's just what it is at this point. And I know they're trying to coach out some of his off-ball habits that aren't necessarily great in a team scheme, and that very much matters. But like he might be a top five Bradley Beal like defender in the league. You know what I mean? Just like the way he can kind of like laterally move and recover and stays with him. Like he just guards one-on-one moves well from wings and scores.
Yeah. I would agree, and I think overall this season, very impressed. And even if this was a game that was intensely frustrating offensively, and it's funny, I have no stats to back this up, but I feel like when Damian Lee misses, he misses long, and when Wiggins misses, he misses short. That's what it felt like. And with the lessened legs, as it were, I felt like a lot of those misses were short. From Wiggins. I'm scattershot observations right now, Anthony. You got to put me in the proper role like a Kelly Oubre. I need to know it. Well, I'm just going free association too much.
I'll get it coming up because I want to break down some of these lower in the West bracket teams and where you think the Warriors can maybe land. But you mentioned Poole, so he had 22 points.
Should have played more.
You know, it's when you are a bench player and you come in with 4 minutes to go in the first and third quarters, it becomes tough to be a closer because he's going to play the last 3 to 4 minutes of the first and third, and then he's playing the first 7 minutes, let's say, of the second and fourth, and then at some point it's like he's kind of tired, right? And it's like, you know, you've earned closing minutes, but at the same time, you've played like 12 consecutive minutes. Like, you might need to get pulled out of the game.
And it may be the thought process, because he was yanked around crunch time. And maybe the thought process is that with Steph in the game, he's not going to be doing the offensive Jordan Poole thing. So he's not going to be giving you the same. But then when he was out, the offense really sputtered and they just couldn't generate looks or any kind of rhythm. So hindsight being 2020, Monday morning quarterback, I probably should have had Poole in that crunch time.
Yeah, I mean, his shot was on tonight. Like, you know, you felt best with him shooting a wide open three over anybody tonight. So, you know, it's funny, I've mentioned this a couple times now. I actually am finally dropping that Jordan Poole story tomorrow, which I would, you know, I'm trying to publicize it a little bit. It's got a ton of quotes from Jordan Poole himself, about 25 minutes interview with him, with Kerr a little bit. Chris Weems gave me a bunch of good quotes, and Chris DeMarco, who works closest on the coaching staff with Jordan Poole, just kind of about this moment for him and the fact that, you know, Kerr has shortened his rotation. By the way, he only played 7 guys tonight. And it's very veteran heavy. Everyone's between the ages of like 26 and 25, 26 and like 33. And like Mannion, like I said, has disappeared. Like Wiseman forced this move, right? Like Wiseman would be playing now and they would be prioritizing Wiseman, but him getting injured has made Kerr completely focused on like the now.
Yeah.
But Jordan Poole is still getting minutes. And to me, yes, they are developmental minutes, but I think it's a very good sign for him that he's not getting developmental minutes. He's getting minutes right now because he's proving he's worth those minutes.
Yeah.
And they're helping them win. And he got 25 minutes tonight and you're sitting here post game talking about like, should he have closed? Should they have played him 30 minutes tonight? And it's a reasonable argument for you to make. And that's quite a jump for him. And I think me and you have really tried to not, you know, hit the gas too much on like where Jordan Poole could be going, because I do think there's a lot of limitations within him, and I'll get into that in the story and where they really need him to be better defensively. But he's made a huge leap.
Yeah, the skill is so impressive. I just don't know what it all ends up being, but yeah, I'm with you on that. Did you get a good quote out of DeMarco? It's hard to get a good quote out of DeMarco. He's so by the book. He's going to, I give him a lot of shit for it. He's going to go back to the coach speak. If you coaxed a few great quotes out of DeMarco, I think I will be as impressed by anything anybody has done in journalism.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
There's been some good journalism in the year 2020, 2021, I must say. A couple solid ones. I think the main thing is, I'm not necessarily even saying I got this out of DeMarco, but I just through the reporting of the story know that during the pandemic, particularly during the bubble when all the Warriors players could do, and I'm talking about the NBA is playing in the bubble, the Warriors are excluded, but they opened their facility. All they could do was have their players go in and go one coach, one player, one basket. And all you could do is just individual work for like, you know, months and months and months, really, yeah. Which is very, you know, tedious and could really drag on. And Poole and DeMarco developed like a routine of, you know, Poole would watch all the bubble games, including like really, he was really watching Miami because he played in college with Duncan Robinson, Tyler Hero. He didn't play in college with Tyler Herro, but they're both from Milwaukee. He just has that connection. He watched a lot of Miami's like off-ball movement. Remember that playoff run Miami had in the bubble? Yeah. And he would like take his phone and take videos off the TV and like send them to DeMarco. Like, hey, let's tomorrow in our one-on-one sessions, which is all they can do. Let's run through this play. You know, let's mimic this play on the court a bunch of times. And he would do that a bunch with defensive stuff too. Like, you know, look at the way Gary Harris trapped the box here. Let's go and mimic this play tomorrow. I just, you know, I thought some of that work for a player who had not, you know, Jordan Poole, and he wasn't alone, but had 9 months of not playing basketball. Mm. Like, how do you get better within that? And that's like a lot of what the story's about.
It's interesting that there are two guys officially with the Warriors who are looking at Duncan Robinson and using him as a model, because the other guy over there in Australia is Justinian Jessup, who specifically watched a bunch of Heat in the finals and was saying, look, I need to know what that guy did. And that Duncan Robinson's become this guy because nobody thought he would become an NBA player, and he's transformed into a valuable piece who's going to make a lot of money. I wonder if they're the only ones. I wonder if it's just Jessup and Poole, or if around the NBA everybody is looking at Duncan Robinson, of all people, as a model for improvement.
I do think there's I'm sure players that are like, that's who I, you know, Jessup, like you mentioned, but Jessup's looking at Duncan Robinson like, that's a player I'll be in the league. Poole's not
I'm
doing
a
that.
Goofy white guy. That's a goofy white guy. That's the guy.
That's Poole's not doing that. Poole is mostly just was looking like, Miami runs a lot of, you know, they do a lot of read and react off ball stuff that the Warriors do. And that's where Poole's kind of got to fit in. And like some of that off ball action, you know, curling around screens that Duncan Robinson does, that he needs to implement that into his game. But Poole has a lot more on ball ability and will have a lot more on ball responsibilities, even on a team with Draymond Green and Steph Curry. So I don't want to pretend like he was watching his former college teammate and saying, that's who I need to be. It was more like he was just studying different nuances of the game. And
I gotcha. He was thinking more like maybe Herro as a model. So let's look at the Poole, because he had this scuffling, a lot of missing, but even after that, after this game, he's at 57.2 true shooting, roughly average in this modern NBA, per 36 minutes, averaging a shade under 22 points a game. At his age, that's interesting. You know, it's both of us don't know the ceiling on it, but definitely worth watching going forward. And I expect some of the percentages to creep up. I think he's a better three-point shooter than 35%. I'll say that much.
Yeah. You know, and this is coming off his first three months in the NBA were three of the least efficient months ever in the NBA. Yeah. He went 1 of 14 on twos in the month of December and 3 of 24 on threes in that same month. So it was like he just like literally almost went a month and like didn't make a shot.
Yeah.
So let's get to the standings. So if you were of the you know, and there was a few people around the Warriors that were like, the last few days, you know, they had gone they had the big Philly win, they had gone 6-2 over an 8-game stretch. Portland was kind of cratering a bit. Lillard was out with a hamstring. You got the Jason Quick story on Terry Stotts. It's just not going that well in Portland. Mm. And there was like this target of the sixth seed. Like, are we sure the sixth seed is out of reach? Looking at the remaining Portland schedule with Tarzan and the remaining Warriors schedule, which is home heavy and it has a lot of like tanking teams. But this loss to me, if you actually thought that was a realistic scenario, and I didn't, I kind of thought it was ambitious. They would have to hop Dallas, Memphis, and Portland, which I don't think is happening. But if you did think it was like realistic, then tonight's loss really stings. They needed that win, just like they're going to need to go basically, you know, like 12-2 if you think six is in play. But let's say six isn't in play. I think they've got to get by either Memphis or Dallas, because you really want to be on the 7-8 side of the play-in, not the 9-10 side. And right now, they are, as we're talking, they're 1.5 games behind Memphis, but Memphis is down 5 at the end of the third quarter as we're speaking to the Clippers. So let's say Memphis lose that, then there's just a one game difference, and they play Memphis the last game of the regular season in Chase Center. That could be, and the tiebreaker would be on the line. So, I don't know. Take it where you want to take it, but what do you think about like where the play-in is, the standings? Who do you like? Who do you not like?
I got so distracted while you were talking, just looking at the standings. Just the design of the play-in with the two quadrants is just almost throwing me.
It's like the line that's kind of dotted to separate 6 and 7, and then the hard line at the end of 10. I was talking about it with Sam Amick on like the Athletic NBA show earlier this week, and he made a good point that like it's kind of cool. It's created this race between 6 and 7. Now, you know, you usually just had 8. Now you have a race at 6 and 7 and a race at like 10, 11. It's like it added an extra layer to the playoff chase where like Dallas really wants to get by Portland.
Mm. Yeah.
It really matters between 6 and 7. That's kind of like a cool new thing. And then add to that, like we might get like Luka Doncic against Steph Curry in a one game elimination scenario. Like that's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be super interesting. I'm trying to figure out, is this like the Elam ending where I looked at it at the beginning before it happened and I thought, this is too crazy. If you're explaining, you're losing. You know, it's like Don Draper trying to explain that Hi-Li is never going to catch on in the United States because people just can't even get over the spelling of it's going to confuse people and it's just not going to work. And then the Elam ending comes for the All-Star game and it's awesome. And this play-in thing, I mean, we had it in the bubble. I don't know if it really connected. I'm still a little bit jury's out on it. I think it does make aspects of the regular season more interesting and it cuts down on tanking, but it is a little confusing and it does dilute making the playoffs. I thought Doncic had a good point on that. And it's, I'm a little bit out on it, but I reserve the right to change my mind if this play-in tournament is going to be incredible and this game between, let's say, Steph and Luka is going to be a classic. I'm a little bit wait and see, because it kind of feels like the Warriors should be fighting for their playoff lives, and instead there's this weird cushion where they would have to try really hard to be out of the play-in.
Well, the Pelicans have continued to make their life easy with just bad loss after bad loss. The Pelicans have now lost 4 straight. Now, New Orleans does play the Warriors 3 times in the final, I think, 12 games. They have not played at all this season. 2 of them are in New Orleans coming up pretty soon. Mm. So if they lost all 3 of those games, sure, they would like crack open the door pretty wide for the Pelicans, but in general, you're right.
I think the Pelicans are a tough scene. I don't think that SVG is connecting with those guys. I just don't see it for them with how.
Not only that, but the Warriors also have 2 Thunder games, or a Rockets game, a Minnesota Timberwolves game. Like, there's a lot of just shovel the wins in the left side of the column. So, I in no way think that
it's a weird feeling.
Play-in.
I wonder how fans feel about it, because it's like it almost feels like they've missed the playoffs, or they've kind of, it's like they fell out of a window and they landed on a mattress. It's a weird thing. It's like they should be fighting for their lives to make the 8th seed. Instead, they're fighting for something a little more abstract, and theoretically they could be out of the whole thing. Except probably not really, because of the schedule you're talking about. So they're going to make some sort of play-in. I mean, that's the scenario, right? It's weird.
Yeah, but the difference between 8 and 9 matters. Now, it doesn't matter like typical years where you're literally in or you're out. But let's say they get 8 and they're playing. This is my prediction. I think Portland's going to fall below Dallas. So I would think at this point, let's say the Warriors get by Memphis, it'll probably be Warriors in Portland.
Oh, yeah.
And if the Warriors win in Portland in a one game scenario, which would be very fun.
I feel like the Warriors might even be favored if Steph is healthy. We're just talking Steph versus the Blazers. I almost feel like, yeah, that's the scenario you want.
And by the way, that's a very fun basketball game. There's going to be like ABC Saturday afternoon or something like that.
Yeah.
And if they win that, then they're the 7. That would probably match them up with Phoenix in the first round. And yeah, there was a play-in scenario. Like, it doesn't feel like a normal 7 seed or whatever. Like, yeah, it will. Once game 1 starts of a series, you'll be like, yeah, they're in the playoffs. And all we'll be talking about is the specifics of the matchup. Let's say they lose that, then they would then drop into what will probably be a, the winner of Memphis San Antonio. This is just my guess, by the way. I'm just like laying out a hypothetical scenario. And that Memphis is better. Let's say Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson, who's supposed to, I think he might be playing tonight. He's supposed to be back very soon. Coming into Chase Center with like 6,500 people there. And it's a complete, it's like a game seven basically in there. Like that'll be fun to go to.
Oh, yeah.
See like a young team against the Warriors. And then if they win that, they probably play Utah in the first round.
Yeah.
And the reason why I say there's a big difference between 8 and 9 is, You're 7 or 8, you get 2 games to win one. You're 9 or 10, you have 2 games to win two. You have to win both. So, I think it's going to be fun. It just the final few weeks of the season set up really fun. If you're following the Warriors,
yeah, I think so. I just don't know. I don't know if what's the percentage of teams that effectively. I know it's not technically the playoffs, but I think it's 2/3 basically of your league makes the playoffs. It's just. It feels a little bit like inflation. That's what it feels like. Like it just feels a little bit goofy. But I agree with you that when we get down to it, it's going to be a fun game. And you know, what is the ideal path as you see it? Not just the path you laid out of being in Portland, but you know who you play.
Hey,
you think Phoenix is the ideal path?
Like, by the way, you think that's bad? Look out east. You know the 25-33 Wizards who beat the Warriors tonight just hopped into the 10.
Oh my
Bradley
God.
Beal is in the 10 seed right now. So quit talking about trading him. He's in the playoff hunt.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Pacers are the 9, by the way.
I mean, that you talk about a great ABC game, Anthony. You know, a great ABC afternoon game.
You could
game.
Put that one on NBA TV.
I feel like right? Pacers Hornets without LaMelo is really what the nation craves.
LaMelo's back, though.
Oh, yeah.
LaMelo will be back for a play-in game, and right now that would be Heat Hornets play-in game with LaMelo Ball in the mix.
Okay, I'm
That's
sold.
Fun.
I'm sold.
Yeah,
I'm
thank
sold.
You. He's sold. Thank you. He's sold. I think we will be exiting play-in weekend, and we'll have Ethan Strauss on the Warriors Plus Minus podcast, and he'll be like, "Wow, that was a great idea. Like, great job."
I'm like Bill Simmons.
Let me look at the ratings. Like the ratings weren't that great.
Cousin Sal, that play-in tournament was amazing. Yeah, oh, I can see. I reserve the right to reverse it. I just feel I'm a traditionalist. What can I say? It just seems like too much dilution. It seems like too many. You know, maybe it's time to expand the league. Then we got to expand the league because too many teams are making the play-in / playoffs.
Seattle. All right. Well, we can close on this topic because you asked me. Let's try to lay out the hypothetical best case scenario. Is that what you asked?
Yeah, best case and worst case. Let's go best case and worst case.
Well, best case remains that they somehow get up to 6 because Portland just completely right now. I'm looking, they're 4 games behind the Blazers. The Blazers and Nuggets right now with 4:55 left in the game are tied 99-99. I should probably flip over to that. And Memphis is now within 2 on NBA TV.
Worst case is there's been a setback, but it won't jeopardize Anthony Davis's return. And, you know, the Lakers just drop a bunch of games and fall into the play-in bracket and play the Warriors. Yeah,
that's probably their worst case. But that doesn't seem like it's happening because the Lakers have kept like a strong deep. By the way, shout out to Frank Vogel. The Lakers like have basically kept a top 10, top 5 defense without Davis and LeBron, and they're like winning a bunch of games, or enough games, I should say. Anyway, I think their best case is you get in the set, well, like I said, the 6, and then you know, if Denver somehow climbs up to the 3 without Murray, that's like absolute best case. But let's assume they're in the play-in. I think it's just get on the 7-8 side, and then who would you rather play, Utah or Phoenix, if you're the Warriors?
Yeah, that is a really good question. I think I would rather... It's tough because Utah's such a complete team, but at the same time, Gobert never seems to be able to handle that action with Steph. Like, he's not good at it. He's not good at playing up. So maybe you could take advantage there. And Phoenix is so complete, but you know, Chris Paul could always pull a hammy. I guess my instinct says Suns, just with the lack of experience. I guess I'll go Suns is the preferable matchup.
Yeah, I'd probably agree. I think it's tougher to go into Utah and win. I think Utah won at some point like 24 straight at home. Phoenix, it just doesn't seem as dangerous of a home team.
No.
I think the Warriors are heavy underdogs in either series. Yeah. And first of all, have to get to either series two, which is like not simple for them. But, you know, just because a potential
also, you know what,
long Steph, what?
I just realized too, like, what are they going to do about Gobert in general? I mean, yeah, he'll struggle with Steph, but they've got nobody tall. It seems like that
are
might
you,
be an issue.
Are you criticizing one Kevon Looney?
No, I think Kevon Looney is
6'9", I think.
A god among men, but he is the height of a power forward slash large wing. It just seems like dealing with Gobert over the course of a series, Draymond's just going to foul out every game.
They lose that series, but
yeah.
You, if you're the Warriors, you want to scare them. You know, I think that's probably, I think that's really the goal at this point for the Warriors. Get into the play-in, get through the play-in, scare somebody.
Yeah.
Scare somebody.
Yeah, scare somebody. That's
a
good
mantra.
And that's
on the table. And that's on the table. So, all right, Ethan, this was enjoyable. We'll talk more A's another time. Frankie Montas
getting lit up. Gotta get the location better. That stuff he has, just, you know, we gotta locate the fastball. I know it's easy from my couch, but we just want to see you do well, Montas. You know,
odd starts of the season for the A's. Would they go like 0-6 and then they won 11 straight? Like, what's going on?
Well, you were so early on the Frankie Montas bandwagon that you have a lot of emotional investment. You told me we went to a matinee game that maybe 1,000 people were at years ago, and you had identified Montas as a guy who might pop, and he might you know, get some momentum and hit the big time. So, yeah, I want him to turn it around. I hope that Lizardo can channel some momentum after the last start, and yeah, the A's, they're cooking up something special.
And that'll do it for the Warriors All 82 podcast. There you go. Ethan Strauss, thank you for coming on.
Anytime. I mean, I lied about that, but sometimes.
Playing game. You'll come after.
Yeah, indeed. Okay.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.